Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 128 in the series entitled The Doctrine of Tzimtzum, Part 1, The Meaning of Infinity, Chapter 48. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York during the spring of 5761.
Evening. We are up to the 48th chapter of the Tanya, Perek Memches. Having previously explained that Hashem demonstrated and showed His love for the Jewish people by taking them out personally from the dunghill of civilization, from the morally deprived land of Egypt, the Alter Rebbe concluded in chapter 47 by describing the love that Hashem shows to each Jew by allowing him or her to leave their personal Egypt as well on a daily basis, by granting the soul the opportunity to become liberated from the imprisonment of its body, to transcend on a daily basis and on a momentary basis the prison-like imposed view of the world that is imposed upon us by our body and by the physical environment in general, the perception of the world as an existence detached of godliness and holiness. So Hashem allows the soul each day to liberate itself from that prison-like perception and to become re-included and reabsorbed in the oneness of reality, which is in the oneness of Hashem. This the soul achieves through Torah and mitzvahs, particularly through the daily declaration of the Jew, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, which is the reason, he said, for the recalling of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus of Egypt, during the recital of the Shema, although apparently they have no connection, because it's through the Shema that the soul experiences on a daily basis its liberation from the Egypt-like perception of reality that is imposed upon it when it is in this world, and its liberation from that state of imprisonment for it, through, and it becomes re-included in the oneness of Hashem. How much we are conscious of this liberation through Torah and mitzvahs, the Alter Rebbe said, depends on our personal refinement. One of the great Hasidim of the Alter Rebbe, I mentioned him many times, his name was Reb Isaac Hameler, Reb Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Epstein. He was the Rav of the Russian city Hamel. And he came to the Alter Rebbe as a young man, and he was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe, and then of his son, of the Mittler Rebbe, and of his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek. Yeah, he lived quite a long life, and he authored various works. So he came to the Alter Rebbe as a young man. The Mittler Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe's middle son, was still a lad, a teenager. And Rabbi Eisel befriended him, and they became very close friends. And as they both became older, Rabbi Eisel related in later years that he says, I felt that the Mittler Rebbe and I were on the same level. I understood him. I experienced him. I felt him. He says, till one day, he says, we were walking through shul. We learned together. And the Beis Medrash, we were learning, we had to pass by a minyan. It was early in the morning. And we were walking through the shul, and the minyan was holding by Baruch Hu. And the chazan said, Baruch Hu is Hashem Hamvarech. And everybody answered, Baruch Hashem Hamvarech Lelom Vod. And I looked at him, and I saw when the cantor said Baruch Hu, when he was about to answer, he became a transformed human being. He was metamorphosized. He experienced something, and a moment, he says, he was a different person. I couldn't recognize him. Many of us say Baruch Hu for thousands of times, and nothing happens to us. So the sensitivity, based on the sensitivity and the refinement of one's body, you can become conscious of what your soul experiences in a Baruch Hu. It experiences a liberation from a prison-like imposed perception of reality, and it becomes in touch with the truth, with the essence, which is the oneness of Hashem that is curtailed and obscured and opaque in the world that we inhabit. As a result of this extraordinary affection showered upon the Jew by Hashem, it is only natural, the Alter Rebbe said, that the Jew should reciprocate with a similar love, kamayim haponim laponim, like the water that reflects, that mirrors the face of the beholder of the water. And now we will continue with chapter 48. Now, the following two chapters, 48 and 49, are devoted to develop this idea of reciprocal love, of kamayim haponim laponim, of the water reflecting back the face that you reflect to the water. The Alter Rebbe develops this idea in yet a deeper fashion and in a very original and creative way. These two chapters, particularly 48, also address some of the fundamental theological ideas in the teachings of Kabbalah and Chassidus. Among them, the Alter Rebbe addresses the famous, complicated, and controversial doctrine of the Tzimtzum, the divine withdrawal process or concealment process that preceded the creation of the world. The Alter Rebbe addresses the idea of Tzimtzum, of Seiviv Kol Alman versus Mamala Kol Alman, and other fundamental doctrines in Jewish mysticism. Yet the Tanya, as is quite evident by now, I think, is not a book of theology or philosophy or mysticism per se, although it's filled with ideas of this field as well. The Tanya is primarily a manual for life. It's a roadmap for the often complicated, winding journey that makes up our daily sojourn here on planet Earth. Though the Tanya offers an all-encompassing worldview presenting the foundational perspective of Chassidus in a very systematic and integrated fashion, yet its ultimate purpose and function, as the author described it in the title page of the book, is to serve as a tool, as an instrument for man to live his life or her life to the fullest, achieving one's purpose for which one was created. So it's fascinating to see how the Alter Rebbe will not just explain the doctrine of Tzimtzum, for example, but in the following two chapters he will employ some of the fundamental Kabbalistic doctrines as a theme which ought to change the way we live our daily lives. As we shall see as we go on with these chapters. Let's begin inside. Perek Memches, that's page 133. Daf Samach Zayin Amar Aleph. Zog Da Alter Rebbe, Vihinei. Kasha Yizboi, Nein Hamaskil, Begdulas Ein Seif Baruch Hu. Now, when the thinking, contemplative person will meditate, will reflect upon the transcendence of the Ein Sof Baruch Hu, of the Endless One, blessed be He. And Alter Rebbe will now proceed throughout this chapter and throughout the first half of the next chapter to explain the ideas that the thinking person should meditate and reflect upon. And he emphasizes here Hamaskil, which means the wise person or the thinking person or the contemplative human being, because as we shall see, he will be touching upon extremely profound subjects in Kabbalah and in Chassidus, and thus he uses the word Hamaskil. So when he will reflect upon the transcendence of Hashem, namely, Kikishmoy Kainhu, that as his name indicates, so he is, the name usually given to the divine energy in Kabbalah is Oirein Seif Baruch Hu, which was also used throughout the Tanya. Oirein Seif Baruch Hu, Oir, the light of Ein Seif Baruch Hu. So the Alter Rebbe says, when you reflect that Kishmoy Kainhu, his name actually indicates what he is. That Ein Sof, the Ein Ketz, the Tachlis Klal, La'er v'chayis ha'mispashet amena yizbarach, there is no end, or limit, or finiteness at all, to the light and energy that diffuse from Hashem. V'ritzay ne'ya poshet, by his undefined will, and his will, which is united with his essence and his very being in a perfect unity. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, when you reflect upon the fact that his name indicates who he is, that the light, the energy that diffused from Hashem is indeed endless. It's limitless. It's boundless. It has no limitation or finiteness whatsoever. And this light extends from him, Biritzoine HaPashat, through his will, by his will, and he emphasizes that this will is Pashat, which means undefined, stripped from any definition or form. And he further adds, this will is one with him in perfect unity. And as we shall see later, hopefully, that the Alter Rebbe here smooths over some very nuanced and delicate problems and questions that exist in Kabbalah in regard to these themes, to these subjects. But in any case, the light and the energy that extend, that are diffused from Hashem, is literally limitless and endless. So Oir Ein Sof interprets to mean the Oir, the energy is Ein Sof. The energy of Hashem is endless and limitless, and that's why it's called Eir Ein Sof, that the light and the energy is Ein Sof. And he continues.
Is it light or is it energy?
Well, he uses two words. You want to know, is it light or it's energy? He uses Eir V'chayis. Eir V'chayis, so I translated it as Eir, light, And chayis, you can translate as energy or vitality, and so forth. So the Alter Rebbe says, oh, that's a good question. That's a very good question. Why does the Alter Rebbe use the term Ein Sof? Why not Ein Sof? If it would say Ein Sof Baruch Hu, you would be talking about the endless one. Oir, obviously, when you say the light and the energy, it immediately indicates that it has a source. It has a cause. It's coming from something. But indeed, the Alter Rebbe here is talking about the Oir. The fact that Hashem Himself is endless and limitless, that goes without saying. What He's addressing here is the energy and the light that diffuse from Hashem, that extend from Hashem. They, like their source, or it, like its source, is also has no ketz, no tachlis, no end, no finiteness, and no limitation. And he says, whatsoever, klal.
In the Tanakh, a number of times, Hashem is a synonym, light is a synonym for Hashem.
That's also true. Now, the issue you raise has very severe implications in Kabbalah and in Chassidus. But I don't want to interrupt the sequence of discussion presently. We will get back to it, God willing. But it's a very good comment you made. It's a good observation. What we immediately see, however, is that he interprets Oir Ein Sof Baruch Hu, not the Oir of the Ein Sof Baruch Hu, the light that comes from the endless one, but he interprets it Oir Ein Sof Baruch Hu, the light is endless. The Oir is Ein Sof. It's not as the source is endless. The light, Oir Ein Sof Baruch Hu, it's a definition for, it qualifies the nature of the light. What type of light is it? It's a light that's Ein Sof. That comes from Hashem, Baruch Hu, blessed be He. And Alter Rebbe says, "V'ilu aysay shtal shalosay lemis may eiring save Baruch Hu belitzim tzumim." Had the worlds evolved from the endless light of Hashem, blessed be He, without tzimtzumim, without contractions, rak. But the worlds would evolve from this energy, according to a gradual descent, from grade, from level to level. By means of cause and effect, ila being the cause for its manifestation, for its alu, for the effect, if that's how the worlds would come about from the Oir Ein Sof, from the divine emanation, then the Alter Rebbe says, Lam hazen nivra klal kamaisho atom. This world, and all it contains, obviously, would not have been created in its present form. The world as we know it would never emerge. What is the nature of the world that we inhabit and we know that it's finite and limited? This world, a world that has a limited and finite order, would never emerge. And Alter Rebbe describes the basic finiteness that characterized the world. And as usual, if he can, he brings the source. The Gemara in Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, he quoted it more at length in chapter 43. The Gemara quotes the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as describing what was the heavenly response to Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian emperor, for saying Ele El Bamase of Adam El Elyon. I will ascend to the top of the clouds, Bamase of. I will become the likeness to the supernal one, to Hashem. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai responded, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said at the Baskel, the heavenly voice responded and said that throughout a person's life, which spans 70 or 80 years, he can't even ascend to the first of the heavens. Never mind, he can't become Adam El Elyon. similar to the most supernal one on high. So the Gemara says, because Me'ar, and Alter Rebbe quotes, Me'ar, it's Lirakiyah Mahalach Tavkuf Shana. Because from the earth to the first heaven is a 500-year journey. Now, 500 years is an enormously great quantity. But nonetheless, it's finite. We're dealing with finite dimensions. And then the Gemara says, V'chein ben kol rakiya v'rakiya. Similarly is the distance between each of the heavens. And the Gemara continues, V'chein oivi kol rakiya v'rakiya. And so also the thickness of each of the heavens is the same distance of a 500-year journey. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying the heavenly voice was responding. Throughout your lifetime, you can't even reach the first heaven, never mind Adam Alayin. Indeed, you will end up in a bottomless pit. This was the response to the wicked Nebuchadnezzar, the man who destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. But what Alter Rebbe is trying to bring out from this Gemara is, the universe is enormous. It's vastly enormous, and the Gemara continues to describe their spiritual levels as well. But nonetheless, you're dealing with finite dimensions. 500 years is a finite amount of time.
Remember last time you said that five of those, I think, are physical, and two of them are...
Yeah, we discussed it in chapter 43 more at length. Because this you can still interpret, perhaps, in physical dimensions. Right. But then the Gemara starts discussing the legs of the angelic beings, and the thighs of the angelic beings, and the torsos, and the heads, and the horns. So it's obvious that the Gemara takes it to spiritual levels as well. But the bottom line is, you're dealing with a finite world that has a scope, that has dimensions, certainly this world, and as well as the first heaven, the second heaven, and up there. And Alter Rebbe continues, V'afilu oylam haba, even the world to come, the Ganeidin Elyon, and the higher level of paradise, the higher level of the Garden of Eden, which are Modar Neshamos HaTzadikim HaGdolim, the abode of the souls of the great Tzadikim, as he described in chapter 39, the various levels of Ganeidin. There is the lower level of Ganeidin, and there's the higher level of Ganeidin, which usually coincides with the spiritual, metaphysical world of Bria, the world of creation. Even that world, which is an abode for great Tzadikim, and furthermore, v'haneshamos atzmon, even not only the abode for the souls, but even the souls themselves, ve'ein tzarech leimer hamalachim, needless to add, the angels, which are lower than souls, hein bebchinas gvul v'tachlis, are all in the realm of bounds and limitation. So even when you're dealing with olam haba, or the souls, they're ultimately defined by limitation. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, if the Oir Ein Sof, if the energy of Hashem, the endless energy of Hashem, would not go through the process he described as Tzimtzum, it would not be severely contracted, curtailed, obscured, as we shall see what happens to it, the world that emerged could not emerge. In other words, the finite, limited world which characterizes the universe and all of the universes could not come into being from the endless light, being that it was endless. You'll ask the question, in chapter 39, the Alter Rebbe said that the souls in the higher Garden of Eden, what are they doing? They're basking in Oir Ein Sof Baruch Hu. They're basking in the radiance of Hashem. And they're aware, they comprehend the reality of Oir Ein Sof. So the Alter Rebbe asks, true, but kiyesh gevul lahasagasan by Oir Ein Sof Baruch. There is a limit to their apprehension of the endless light of Hashem. Hameir aleihen bislapshus chachma bina das chuli, which shines upon them through being clothed in the attributes, in the faculties of chachma, conception, bina, comprehension, and das, application, and so forth. In other words, the energy of Hashem that they are aware of, that they experience, already assumes a new property. It assumes the property of Chachma, the properties of Chachma Bina Das, the intellectual faculties, and because of that, the light becomes limited. And therefore, they can be aware, consciously aware, and experience the light. V'lachein, and therefore, since there is a limit to the light that they are aware of and they are experiencing, therefore, yesh gvul ha'na'asan. There is also a limit to the enjoyment, shenenin miziv ha'shchina, that they derive from the ray of the shchina, umis'angin ba'er Hashem, and to their pleasure in the light of Hashem. Ki ein yichaylim lekabel hana'a v'taynug b'pchinis ein seif mamish. Because they are incapable of deriving enjoyment and delight of a truly infinite order, shelo yisbatlu mimitziyusam, so that they should not be nullified of their existence, v'yachzeru l'mekayron, and return to their source. In order that they, all the heavenly creatures, even the souls of the highest level of Gan Eden, should retain their identity, they could not by any means experience or enjoy what Eir Ein Sof is really all about. They can't begin to enjoy that. Because if they would experience what Eir Ein Sof is really all about, they would become Eir Ein Sof. They would become Eir Ein Sof. They would totally be nullified, totally melt away and return to their source in Eir Ein Sof. You cannot expect the vessel, as spiritual and as powerful as it is, but if it's a finite vessel, you cannot expect it to remain intact when you allow it to experience an energy that will totally shatter its perception of reality, totally shatter its perspective on life, which allows it to function the way it is. And the same is true with all levels. We live the way we live because we don't experience everything. We can speculate, we can understand, we can dream, we can reflect. But if you want the vessel to remain intact, if you want even these souls' identities to retain their nature, their character, their personality, the energy that is communicated to them must assume a new property. New properties, Chabad. So even the creatures of the highest spiritual worlds are finite beings, and in order for them to be created in a finite manner, the process of tzimtzumim, of contractions, must be invoked. Now the Alter Rebbe goes on, and he says, V'hine Protius ha-tzimtzumim eichuma. Now, as for the intricate details of the tzimtzumim, of the contractions, how and what, how they achieve their effect, and what they actually are, ein kan mokim biyura. This is not the place for their explanation. Why not? He doesn't say why not. Because it's not Tanya. Tanya is a manual for life. It's a roadmap, as I said, it's a blueprint for life. How to live your life to the fullest, how to achieve your mission, how to deal with your struggles. But the Alter Rebbe explains the Tzimtzumim in other places, in other discourses, relatively speaking, at length in an elaborate fashion. So the Alter Rebbe says, into details I'm not going to get into here, but in a general fashion, that which is relevant to the psychological, spiritual implications to the Jew's daily life, that he will describe and discuss in the following chapters. So the Alter Rebbe, derech klal, however, generally speaking, hein heim pchinas hester vehelim amshachas oir v'achayis. the tzimtzumim are something in the nature of an obscuring and concealment of the flow of light and energy. They are a hester vehelem. They are an obscuring and concealment of the flow of the light and the energy. So that the light and the energy should not illuminate and reach the lower creatures in a conscious manner, pervading them and stimulating them, and animating them to become and exist. Something from nothing, ex nihilo. So the tzimtzum, the obscuring, the process of concealments and contractions effects, that the lower creatures should not experience this light in a conscious fashion. Kiim, however, only ma'at mizeir ovechayis, an extremely minute measure of light and of energy, so that they, all of the lower creatures, should be in a state of finitude, of finiteness and limitation. So the Alter Rebbe said, if the worlds would evolve from the energy of Hashem in a gradual fashion, as he put it, in a fashion of Ila va'alul, you could not create a gvul v'tachlis. You could not create a limited universe. It's only by virtue, as a consequence of the tzimtzumim processes, which obscure the light that create the worlds, and does not allow the light to pervade them and impact them and stimulate them and vivify them in a conscious way, that a limited world can emerge. Now, what is Ila Va'alu? What is Ila Va'alu? Literally, Ila is the cause and Alu is the effect. But let's explain it for a moment to understand what Alter Rebbe is saying. Ila is the antecedent of the Alul, which is the effect of that antecedent, of that cause. The world we inhabit is basically governed almost absolutely by the principles of Ila and Alul, by cause and effect. Everything and everybody has an Ila, has an antecedent, a cause to which it can be directly or indirectly traced. What is the Ila of a chicken? An egg. What is the Ila of a house? Lumber. What is the Ila of lumber? What is the antecedent of lumber? A forest. And so on and so forth. Everything and every event is a product of a progressive development that consists of a sequence of causes. One cause produces one effect, which in turn produces another cause, which produces another effect, and so on. Now, the chain of the first antecedent and the final effect may be very long, very complicated. The last link may be very different from the first. There is no obvious similarity between an apple seed and the apple tree. Look at the apple seed and look at the apple tree. They don't look exactly the same. There's no obvious similarity between an embryo and a 20-year-old adult. Or the procreative seed or the egg and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, the tree is a distant link in a long chain of causes and effects from the seed. Just as the 20-year-old adult is the ultimate effect of a long chain of causes and effects from the original embryo. Now, the rule in Ila Va'alul is that the first Ila the first antecedent and the final effect may look very dissimilar, but they share powerful common denominators. The apple seed cannot produce a goldfish. You can do with it whatever you want. You can take it through an evolution, a process of myriads of levels. But it's not going to produce a goldfish. For that matter, it's not even going to produce a peach tree. It's going to produce an apple tree. Because the features that define the distant olul, the distant effect, are limited by the features that define the earlier ilah, the earlier antecedent. There are certain properties, albeit very nuanced and abstract, that they have in common. There are properties in the seed, in the apple seed, that it shares in common with the apple tree, and there are properties in the embryo that it shares in common with a 20-year-old human being. If we were to dismiss the principle of ilah v'olul in our life instantaneously, all doctors, psychiatrists, historians, mechanics would lose their job. They would go out of business. The basis of our world, of how we function in this world in a pragmatic fashion, is based on our unequivocal belief in ilah v'olul. We believe that by analyzing the effect, you can come to discover the cause. And in turn, conversely, by knowing the cause, you can predict many times the effect. And that's why modern physics and quantum mechanics has become very, very complicated, because it defies the certainty that ilah v'olul gives our lives. Uncertainty principle shakes up our perception of what the foundations of reality are. But the whole study, I mean, now is maybe a little different, but in ancient times at least, or till 60, 70 years ago, and even today, most areas of science are based on ilah v'olul. That's basically what consists the study of science. The whole study of medicine is based on ilah v'olul. History is, of course, based on ilah v'olul. It's based on the principle that everything has a history of which it is a product. And that's why you can study history and give it reference points and frameworks and learn from it. Now, to be sure, history is a good example of how distant the olul can be from the ilah. International global events can be the outcome and the outgrowth of one word that one human being said. That can change the world negatively or positively. We have in the Chumash many such events. One of the more popular ones is that there's an event where, how would the newspaper of the day report the famine in Egypt? Headlines would be, I guess, that the fertile crescent is devastated by a titanic famine that's claiming countless lives. And one man comes to the rescue. He's appointed viceroy of Egypt, Yosef, Joseph, and he saves the situation. He takes out from his storehouses the multitude of grain that he compounded over 7 years, and he saves the Middle East and, by extension, most human civilization of the time. How does the Chumash report that story? What's the ilah of that story? What's the antecedent of that story? That Yosef Atzan, and that antecedent has many more, but one of them, one of the links in the chain, I'll be referring to this link, that one morning, Yosef wakes up in prison cell, and he sees two people who seem melancholy, and he turns to them and he says, "Good morning. Why do you guys look depressed? how is life? And they tell him why they look depressed, because of their dream, and he interprets their dreams. And 2 years later, when Pari has a dream and he desperately is seeking an interpreter, the guy says, oh, imprisoned, there was an interpreter. And Yosef is liberated and he's ultimately appointed to the viceroy, to become the viceroy of Egypt. So it's the whole study of history is based on ilovol and cause and effect. The whole concept of therapy, of psychoanalysis, which is became the hallmark of our present day and age, is all based on ilovol. It can be, again, very far. A little scar inflicted on a two-month-old child or on a two-year-old child, if it's not dealt with, can develop in a titanic emotional dysfunction. But the function, the role of a honest psychiatrist is to trace back the olul all the way back. And it's a hard process. It's a difficult process. But we believe so much in ilov olul, we know he can't be. You just have an emotional dysfunction. Let's see what happened to you when you were 8 months. This is called in Chassidus Yishtalshelus Ha'olamos. Why Yishtalshelus Ha'olamos? About the Rebbe explains in Likutei Torah, Yishtalshelus comes from the word shalsheles, which means a chain. A chain is a great physical metaphor for this concept. One rung is intertwined and linked to the other rung. And ultimately, the rung on the bottom is connected, not directly, but indirectly, to the first rung, and they share similar properties. And Kabbalah and Chassidus describe creation as a process called Hishtalshelus, an evolutionary process, where spiritual creatures develop and evolve until the final product of our universe is produced. But the question is how it all began. That's the question. You go, you take back. So, Hishtalshelus Ha'olamos is a fundamental doctrine. Every single creature, being, existence, evolved from an antecedent that evolved from a previous antecedent and from a previous cause and all the way back. And it becomes more abstract and more spiritual and more celestial. But how did it all begin? So, the Alter Rebbe says, if the beginning of the evolution of the worlds would develop from Oir Ein Sof, from the emanation of Hashem, in a process of Ilov Ha'olul, in a process of a cause and effect, then the world, the limited worlds, the hallmark of existence, finiteness and limitation, would never emerge. Because the properties of Oir Ein Sof are defined by the fact that it's propertyless. Did I just make up a word?
Yeah,
but that's good that I made up a word, because there's no word for it. So if you want the properties of finiteness and limitations, never mind the individual creatures. Dr. Rebbe says there has to be the major tzimtzum. That light has to be severely curtailed, obscured, contracted, and so forth. This is what he's saying. And it can by no means consciously pervade the lower creatures Hashem is attempting to bring into being. If it would reveal itself consciously within the structure of this world, which is the process, in other words, of Ilov Ha'olul, where you can identify usually within the effect, the cause, in a revealed and conscious way, that would be the end of the effect. Yes? He says even Gan Eden Alyon, all has to be come into being only by the Ur being Mitzumtzum.
Right. So in other words, he's saying if it happened, if it would have happened, then
he didn't say that. He didn't say what you said. He said the world wouldn't look as it looks now. That's how he put it. He didn't say there would have been infinite worlds. He said the world as we know it would not exist. Those were his words, right?
Yeah. I wanted to clarify.
Yeah. So you would think he's only talking about Elam Hazes. He says, no, I'm talking about Gan Eden Elyon, I'm talking about Malachim, I'm talking even about Neshamas. Right. Right. You have a point. That's a good question. Chapter 38, he said there's a difference between Tzimtzum and Hester. That was relevant to the context there. But here he's joining forces. In the context here, the worlds are impacted both by the Tzimtzum and the Hester he described above. In chapter 38, he was describing Torah mitzvahs with kavon or without kavon. But he was not talking about the world. He was talking about Torah mitzvahs. So he says, Torah mitzvahs in the physical world without kavon are impacted by the tzimtzum. I'm sorry. Without kavon... The difference of Torah mitzvahs with kavon and without kavon... is only in the Hester, but not in the Tzimtzum. But here he's talking about the world. He's talking about another subject. So here it's both the Tzimtzum and the Hester, so he joins forces. Now, so what do we see from here? That you can simply not expect to produce, invigorate, stimulate a defined creature with its distinctive qualities and personality by infusing it with an infinite energy. We can be who we are only because we are not conscious of the infinity of life. We can be created the way we are because we're not conscious of the infinity of life. The moment we would be consciously experiencing the Ur in its undiluted form, we would cease to be who we are. So we can't see too much, we can't appreciate too much of real reality, because that would be the end of our existence. You can really state it a little differently, if you wish. The Alter Rebbe, you puts it elsewhere this way, yes.
Is it possible to experience?
At the present stage, no. You see, that's what Nadav and Avihu's struggle was. They didn't like the whole Tzimtzum theory. They wanted to go beyond it. So they ceased to be. Torah Chaim writes in Parshas Acharimos, Karvasim Lefnei Hashem, they wanted to kiss Hashem. You could state it a little bit differently to clarify it, perhaps. The cardinal law of existence is if you place an object of 100 cubic feet inside a space of 100 cubic feet, no other object can share that space. If you have an object of infinite size, at least hypothetically speaking, if we can imagine such a thing, no other object can occupy any space at any time. So if Hashem's light is infinite, extending not only beyond the conceptual borders of our existence, but also filling the entire expanse of existence as we know it, so can anything exist at any time? Unless it's part of the infinite light. If it's part of the infinite light, gesunte eight. But how can anything exist at any time? So to produce a world that exists and is consciously existing in terms of an identity and a personality, as spiritual as it may be, the infinite light needs to be replaced by properties of finiteness. And then this energy can consciously be communicated to the universes, allowing them to become the limited or even self-conscious creatures they are. Now, one can think, so the Alter Rebbe, the Hashem, takes the energy, so to speak, and he dilutes it. He weakens its intensity. He reduces its impact. If that would be the case, it would still be Ilaval. You would say the properties of the first cause define the properties of the final effect, but the properties of the first cause need to be adjusted, repackaged, diluted, restructured. It would still be ilava'al. So the Alter Rebbe adds, and he clarifies what the Tzimtzum achieves. He says, Shehi ha'ara mu'etis ma'ait. This light and energy that is revealed within the creatures after the Tzimtzum, after the contraction, constitutes an infinitesimal illumination. Nu? So he adds, Umamish kiloi chashivi legabe pchines ha'are b'li gvul v'tachlis. And it is truly considered as naught when compared with the quality of the limitless and infinite illumination. Ve'ein beineim erech v'yachas klal. And there is no valuation or relationship between them. Between the original pre-Tzimtzum divine emanation, between the original Oir Ein Sof, the endless light of Hashem, and the Oir as it looks in the post-Tzimtzum reality, where it is already affected by the contraction, by the Tzimtzum, it's mamash kaloi chashivi. It's literally compared to as though it's naught relative to that light. There is no relationship whatsoever. Doesn't have any erech, any valuation. Now, what does this mean? What does the Alter Rebbe mean? You could say the Alter Rebbe means it's so inferior, so it's insignificant. This light, relative to this light, is so inferior. It's like valueless. It's what is it? It's not even. It's a ray of a ray of a ray. You barely get a pure glimpse into the original light when you experience the post-Tzimtzum light. So the Alter Rebbe says, no, that's not what I mean. K'noi da pirush milas erech b'misparim. As is known, the meaning of the term erech, of the term value, as it's understood in numbers. She'echad b'mispar, in other words, when we say something doesn't have an erech, doesn't have a value, he says, let's understand what that means. We know what it means in numbers, when we talk about numbers. She'echad b'mispar, yesh lay erech, l'gabi mispar elef alof. Number one has a value relative to the number of 1,000 times 1,000. Elef alofim, 1,000 thousandths. Which is a million. 1,000 times. Number one has value relative to 1,000,000. Why? Shehu chelek echad mini elef alofim. For one is 1,000,000th part of it. One is a 1,000,000th part of it. It constitutes one part of the elef alofim, of the 1,000 thousandths. The sum of 1,000,000 is merely the sum of 1,000,000 ones. Subtract but one, and the million ceases to exist. Which demonstrates the fact that there is a relationship between them. Number one has an erech, a value relevant to 1,000,000. So you can't say one has no value in the presence of 1,000,000. What does it mean? Well, how can you say that? Take off one from 1,000,000 and it's not the same. The million is made up from the one and from another 900,999 ones. Aval, however, legabe davar klal. But relative to a thing which is infinite and transcends numeration totally, ein kenegdei shum erech b'misparim. There is no number, however great, that can possess a value relative to it. Shafilu elef alfei alof v'ribur revavus, for even a thousand times a thousand, which is a billion. Viribui Ravavis, and even 10,000 times 10,000, all those thousands, which would be a trillion, even those numbers, Einon Afilu, Ke'erech Mispar Echad, Legabe Elef, Alfe Alofim Viribui Ravavis, do not even attain the value of the number one in comparison with a billion or a trillion. Ela Kaloi Mamish Chashivi. Rather, they are deemed absolutely insignificant and valueless, as though they were non-existent. The distance between one and a million is enormous, and the value of one relative to a million is very minute. So if you would have $1 million, how significant would be $1? It would be quite insignificant. It wouldn't be too significant. $10 would also be not so significant. $100? New. $10,000? Oh, now you're getting serious already. But the fact that $100 is more serious than $1 and $10,000 is more serious than $100 demonstrates that even $1 has a value in the world of $1 million. Even in the world of $1 trillion, one has value. True, minute, infinitesimal, in borrowed terminology, you'll say it's nothing, it's insignificant, it's valueless. But ultimately, there's a relationship. 1 trillion is made up of 1 trillion ones. And if you retake away one, you don't have a trillion. So you can't say it doesn't have an erech. But the Alter Rebbe says, if you're talking about something infinite, now the truth is infinity, you can't describe in terms of numbers. Because you can't say if you have an infinite amount of numbers, because if you add another number, it's finite, and you can always add one more number. So we cannot understand infinity in terms of numbers. There is the famous book of Chayvus HaLevavos, The Duties of the Heart, in Shaar HaYichud, the portal of unity, he brings the various proofs for Hashem's existence, and one of his doctrines that Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pekuda discusses there in chapter 5, that it's impossible from finite realities to make up something infinite. Because if you'll take away one part of it, you diminished it. So it's not infinite anymore. So when the Alter Rebbe talks about something which is infinite, you can't understand it in terms of a million numbers, a trillion numbers, a zillion numbers, and go on until you reach an infinite amount of numbers. It's a different reality. But suppose, in our mind, theoretically speaking, the reality of infinity, if we can imagine it on some level in our own minds. So here is the question. Is 1 million any closer to infinity than one? Is 1 trillion, 1 zillion closer to infinity than 1, than 2, than 3? By attaining the number of 1 trillion, you haven't reached even an infinitesimal closer to your destination, so to speak. Infinity is identically remote from 1 and from 1 trillion. In the world of infinity, 1 and 1 million are identical. Both don't bring you one drop closer to the end, which is endless. So in terms, in the presence of infinity, relative to infinity, the greatest number doesn't have any value. The Alter Rebbe uses these numbers not to say that the greater numbers do have a value. He uses these numbers apparently because he wants to paraphrase Nishmas. The Rebbe, in his footnotes on Tanya, writes on this piece, Loshen Nishmas. Why does he add it? Because he wants to explain why the Alter Rebbe is using these numbers. It's a Nishmas already. In the Tefillah of Nishmas, we say on Shabbos, the Kolboy writes, by the way, that Shimon ben Shattach authored it.